White Tenape Noise Podcast. I'm Oscar Brummel, and today my guest is Nicola Vinciguerra, a.k.a. Tisbor, the Italian pervert behind long-running harsh noise product Fecalove, sleazy power electronics product Tater, and the Italian division of Turdered Animal Records. Nicola is also a prolific visual artist, and you can see his work at tisbor.com. If you're hearing this, you're not accessing the episode through Patreon, and will only be getting the first part of the episode. In order to access full episodes of White Tenape Noise Podcast, you'll need to subscribe at patreon.com/whitetenapenoise. There you can also get access to WCNTV episodes, the Discord server, and a wide range of bonus noise content. Hello, Nicola.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for joining me, Mr. Tisbor, Mr. Fecalove.
Yeah.
Mr. Turgid Animal, you are, you know, quite infamous, I would say, you know, for people who kind of got into noise, have been involved in noise in the era that I was, you know, kind of like late 2000s, mm-hmm. Tronics board kind of era, you know, you are an institution of this scene. And so it's very nice to finally meet you, not in person, but kind of sort of in person.
Almost.
After, you know, a long time contact and...
True, yeah.
So, your project Fecalove, Tater, you ran Turgid Animal. We're going to talk about all of that stuff and much more. You're not, you're a very prolific visual artist as well, and you kind of have made your imprint on the noise scene as well in terms of album covers. Like, you've been...
Yeah, I did a lot of them. Yeah.
You did a lot of them.
Drawings almost all end up on some cover
yeah,
of some kind.
Exactly. Yeah. So the center of your work seems to be your cock.
It's a great starter, and yes, yeah, my whole life, I guess. My whole life is my cock.
Tell me about your cock.
Oh, it's a good cock. It's the only cock I have, and I nurture it. And I follow whatever instructions it gives me.
I mean, there's your cock, and there's also shit is a big part of it too.
That's true. Well, they go very well together, cock and shit. So,
do they have different meanings for you? Do they have different driving forces for you? Your cock and shit.
Well, my cock pretty much actually dictates like everything. It's like my, how do you say, it's like the glasses I see everything through, you know. And well, shit is shit. It's stuff that's discarded, processed. It's trash, and I love trash. So yeah.
So Fecalove, let's start by talking about Fecalove. There's, you know, it's a harsh noise product, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, over 100 releases from Fecalove.
Oh, I think well over, probably 200.
200.
Or even.
Are you still active? How active are you now with Fecalove?
I still record, not daily, but maybe weekly, something that then ends up being Fecalove. So yeah, I have like 2, 3, 4 things that are in the works. I've almost done release my own Fecalove stuff on my own anymore, but if somebody asks me, I say yes, because I'm, you know, I'm happy to do it if somebody asks.
Of all the releases, like, what would you say are 3 that someone should, who hasn't maybe listened to your work, isn't familiar, should seek out, that you're most proud of, that you think represent your work, and maybe that are like available? I'm sure you've done a lot of things that are very, you know,
yeah, that's
hard to find, long gone editions, but like 3 releases that you say represent you well, that someone could seek out and
with Fecalove, you mean?
Yeah, with Fecalove.
I'd say both easier to get and pretty good quality, and also like shows pretty much everything that I like to present as Fecalove. would be the one on Crucial Blast, Void, Chaos, and Calm. It's a CD, and it's quite long, but it has lots of variation and pretty much all the different kinds of sounds that I used in Fecal of Art there.
Mm-hmm.
So probably that's the easiest one to start with. Also, I'd say Great Northern War is another CD, pretty easy to get, probably very cheap.
This was on Narcolepsia, right?
Narcolepsia and collaboration with Untergeschoss.
Yeah.
Hmm. That's also a good one. It's a bit weirder, maybe. Funky, which I also like.
That was your Norway era.
Yeah. That was recorded back in Norway. Yeah, I think it's the first ever CD or release at all that I recorded through a really good audio card.
Uh-huh, okay.
Someone gave to me and was like, yes, fuck.
Cool.
And then probably one that I released on my own. I should still have some covers, so I can actually give it to people, but it's for free on Bandcamp anyway. It's a tape. Very few of the copies actually were distributed. But as I said, it's on Bandcamp. And also, is it on Spotify?
What's it called?
It's called, I forgot the name of my own release. Overwhelming Last.
The second edition of the Initial Shock Fest will take place on July 6, 2024 in Montreal, featuring Richard Ramirez, The Nausea, Heat Signature, Slime Street, Flat Grey, Skin, Parasite Nurse, Echthros, Deep Grey, Death Glaze, Murmur, Foul, Praxillus Succubus, Come and See, and Splinter Assembly. Advanced tickets are available now at initialshock.screamandride.com. An Aftershock matinee will take place the following afternoon, featuring Thin Mountain, Molina, Aaron Altomare, Green Mist, and John Vaughn. Follow Initial Shock MTL on Instagram for regular fest updates, including artist bios and more. Initial Shock is presented by Scream and Writhe and Disaster Sources, sponsored by Factor, Pizza Bouquet, and Untitled Zine. There are 4 new CDs out next month on White Centipede Noise from Jim Haynes, Primitive Isolation Tactics, Trerix Roset, and The Rita. Find them soon at a distributor near you, or you can receive them as a gift free in the mail when you subscribe to the Patreon at the Premium Plus level by the time they're released.
How has Fecal of progressed over the years, and when did it start? Like, I mean, there have been, like you said, like the Great Northern War is kind of like a different one, and I know there's been a lot of variation and development throughout the product over the years.
It started back in 2002, wow. Actually. The first stuff I ever recorded was that year. So, yeah. It's the first noise I ever recorded was really bad and digital, just made with whatever I thought was the only way possible to make noise. I think it's a lot of people from my generation kind of had that approach.
Sure.
You listen to some Merzbow or whatever, Pain Jerk, and you think, how the fuck do you make that?
Yeah.
And then you try to make it with a computer. Of course, only a computer can make that. Then slowly you find out that, nah, not really.
Yeah.
Not only.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I never stopped. So it's been more than 20 years. So, of course, it changed a lot.
Cheers. That's a long-running project. You also ran Turgid Animal, the mm-hmm. label, which also back in those kind of like mid late 2000s times was very, very active. When did that start?
It started in 2005, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, we met on the noise board.
Right, and you and you and George Proctor. So for people who don't know, there is or was an Italian division and a UK division, and you ran this label together with George Proctor.
Yeah.
Who also does Mutant Ape.
Exactly, yeah. And now very active with Stoic Strength and lots of great and filthy black metal stuff. He released not at the 20th year anniversary, because we are both very slow in making shit. So it became the 21st year anniversary or fix on tape.
Cool.
That's also quite easily available. We met on the noise board. I don't remember why we started trading, but I remember getting his very first Mutant Tape tape in trade, and then eventually we actually became friends. I went to his house like a year after, something like that, to hang out and play a few gigs, and we started collaborating on a lot, really a lot of releases, and we were both doing like stuff separately, like things that I did 100%, like the design, the dubbing, and whatever. I also think things that we made together. So maybe I made the artwork for something that he physically made, or vice versa, and so on and so on. So it was very confusing, and we ended up having like 600 something releases. And it never actually died. So when I release something on my own, it's still Turgid Animal. So
Italian Division. Do you still say Italian Division?
Yeah, because it's funny. Yeah. It became Viking Division while I was in Norway.
Right. Yeah. I remember that. So like, I can't remember. Were you always doing like independent releases or batches, and then just kind of like putting them under the same name, or were you releasing kind of batches together and making them available from both of you?
It was completely chaotic. Sometimes it was we did batches completely separately, probably without even knowing about it. And I didn't know what I was doing, and vice versa.
Yeah,
it was way faster than me back then. So in doing stuff, and sometimes we, you know, especially with things that maybe needed a bit more attention, because we were maybe making up a few more copies than we were used to, or something like that, or something we were really proud of. We collaborated and released it in unison,
right?
Let's say.
What made you want to do a label together? Because I mean, that's something rare, even. Even now, even within people like living in the same city, like I always am curious when I interview people to tell me about how they run a label together, because that's a challenge. I mean, one person taking over all the responsibilities kind of makes things easier in some way, because you can just do it. When you have another person involved, then sometimes that works really smoothly, but sometimes it can also make things, like you say, more confusing or whatever. What made you decide to do that like that?
I have no idea, and I think that also George doesn't. I remember just a few email exchanges. Hey, why are we releasing like stuff on our own and not on a label? Let's make a label. That's it. Pretty much that's it. So yeah, no real reason. Probably just, you know, having fun with our own shit.
Yeah. So doing the artwork at the, you know, like, noise releases from this era, the Turgid Animal stuff had a lot of your drawings on it.
Yep.
But also a lot of stuff from the noise scene had your drawings. And you usually use the name Tisbor.
Yeah.
Right? Affiliated with your artwork. What is the name Tisbor? What does Tisbor mean?
That's a fun one, and probably you would be happy where this is going, because it's right back at the start of our discussion. My best friend in high school gave me made me a pin, like handmade, that said "Ti sborro in faccia," which means "I come on your face," and I had it on my jacket for maybe 20 years, something like that. So Peace Boar is short for I come on your face. Yeah.
would someone Italian understand that from the name?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, because sborro means come. So
it's clear.
It's very easy.
Okay.
Available May 4th, 2024 from Reanimated Miscarriage, cult 80s and 90s noisecore reissues, and discography compilations from Gorbage, Minch, Pissed Off Orgasm, Rectal Pus, Stench of Corpse, Suppression, and Ulcerous Phlegm, along with several one-off side projects featuring members of Ass Suck, Drop Dead, Meat Shits, and Spaz, and thought-to-be-lost material from 80s punk proto-noisecore pioneers Sea Monkeys. New shirts, a restock of mixtapes, zines, and Deadbeat at Dawn official merchandise, as well as Trauma Team Publishing's premiere release will also be available in limited quantities. The easiest way to secure copies is by joining the mailing list by writing diseaseofthespirit@gmail.com.
So tell me about your visual art, because that's, you know, parallel seems to be also an extremely huge part of your life and your creative output. And I don't know how much, you know, you do outside of the noise scene world that maybe we don't know about, but that's, you're clearly very prolific and very gifted as well. So when did you start doing visual art, and tell me about your visual artwork?
I started as far as I remember. So I was a kid. I think that I started just copying comic books, Marvel and DC stuff, but also all these Italian comic strips like Sturmtruppen, Kativik. Probably don't know them, but for almost every Italian, they ring a bell. And then trying, you know, to make my own, like with the same characters, stuff like that. It's always been pretty much automatic. Every day, I at least doodle something.
I have
to do it, I guess.
I'm sure you've been drawing since an early age, but Tisbor art has like a very distinctly perverse quality, and it has like these mutant, like nightmarish sexual images where you look at them and you can sense like the organs, the shit, the cocks, but once you look at them closely, you realize that they don't quite make like physical sense, or they don't quite make like realistic. You can't follow them rationally. If there's some sort of mutation or like stretch of time or place in some way. You know what I mean? Like, when did you arrive at that world?
Probably growing up and following my taste in art and literature. So. Getting lots of different inputs. One of the few things I'm thankful for being born in Italy is that I'm surrounded by some of my favorite things. So old decrepit churches, old corpses, and ruins and stuff like that. That's a big inspiration. And probably like putting together this old death and Bellmer, Trevor Brown, like more modern stuff, Slocomb, Antoine Bernard, all that stuff turned into that, I guess. And probably something I should show to a psychiatrist or something, but. It's probably a psychophysical representation of something. In Ballard terms, something like that, you know.
Are they erotic to you?
Yeah. Yeah, again, I don't, and if something doesn't make my cock at least tingle, then I scratch it.
Do you have you shown them in like a wider art context in any way beyond like underground music or underground culture? Have you, you know?
No, not really. All the shows the exhibitions I had were underground, so no big art galleries, joint shows with other artists and stuff like that. I'm not really interested in, yeah. In that. The only thing that would interest me is the money and that world. All the rest seems really icky to me.
Sure. Does your family know about your drawings and what do they think about them?
Yeah. I guess they're used to it by now. But I remember back when I finished studying in Florence. I went back to my mother's house for a couple of years. And it was pretty heavy drinking period. So I was even more messy than now. So I left like all my drawings all around the place. And at the time, my mother... she still does. She doesn't walk very well. She has problems with her legs and stuff. So she needs help to clean the house. So there was this woman that maybe like once or twice a week was helping us with the chores. And I was too drunk to really help in a meaningful way besides, carrying stuff or whatever. And I remember once, she told me, it's funnier in the dialect from my hometown, but this was like not an elderly woman, but a woman in her 50s. She told me, I never saw so many dicks. and I said, oh yeah. Yeah, but they are really well made. Well, thanks. That's the greatest compliment I ever. So, yeah, they know.
Going back to Fecal Love, tell me about playing live when you do Fecal Love. Mm-hmm. I've heard things and I've seen photos, but I don't know how literal the descriptions are that I've heard. And so tell me about what you do when you play live with Fecal Love.
Probably very literal. Basically, since 2007, I think it was the tour in the UK actually with George and Bloody Minded. I started this kind of ritual communion with the audience, where I put some very simple intro on a tape, some disgusting sounds you don't really know what's going on, but you can tell it's sex related or samples like slightly distorted and stuff like that, some loops. And while this is going on, I start touching my dick and going around the audience and caressing them on their face, maybe touching their butt, kissing their heads, or very gently. I always imagined it would get violent reactions, but I almost never did. That's a great disappointment in my career. So,
you said almost never did.
No.
But does that mean sometimes you did ever?
Kind of, but again, nothing really happened. Like some guys get really stiff, not in the right way, and they maybe threaten to punch me, like, don't touch me, but then they don't do it. I say, yeah, do it.
Do you touch them anyway? Do you touch them anyway when they threaten you?
I insist even more with these clients, but then nothing ever happens. Usually they just walk away disgusted or embarrassed. Probably, I hope, with a hard one. But
when was the last time you did that?
Last time that somebody threatened me?
No, last time you performed in this way?
Probably last year. Yeah, my last gig was last year, so most likely. Yeah.
What about the issue of, you know, I don't know, consent or safe spaces, or do you ever warn the audience or give them a chance to get away or anything like this? I mean,
that, no, I don't care.
You just do it. You don't care.
No, I mean, fuck that shit. It's so boring. I'm old. I don't want to even know about that stuff. If you want to punch me, punch me.
What about a girl who feels a certain type of way that you put your dick on her face?
Well, my dick is actually in my pants, but she can just tell me go away with her eyes or whatever. I'll go away.
Okay. So you're holding strong to this performance style in 2024.
Yeah, it's fun to do so. And gives people something to remember. So a show, at least. Yeah.
I mean, it is like this. There's this type of performance. I don't want to say performance art, but performance style associated with noise, with power electronics, even with, you know, punk. That is kind of a mainstay of the art form, if you want to call it that. You know, biggest example, Gigi Allen, of like just like assaulting the audience and like not caring and trying to provoke and upset them. And do you feel like that's kind of going away, or do you think, you know, Condom, for example, I mean, what Condom did was probably some of the most like Death Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the most like border and boundary crossing performance style with an audience. And there are places now that would just say, like, you know, this is strictly against our rules, like you're not allowed to do this.
I bet.
Yeah,
we lost that. And it's a shame, because I mean, not only our greats like Gigi Allen and Mike Dando, but even in performance art, some shit just doesn't fly anymore.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about all 70s stuff, even Italian stuff. There was this guy that just at Venice Biennale, I think it was, in the 70s, he just showed a Down syndrome guy sitting on a stool. That's it. That was the show. If try to do that now, it's a fucking riot. Or people cutting themselves. It's even that is kind of problematic. That kind of has a some spaces you can do that, and some people do, but it's still all with this aura of will people get upset? Can you really do that? Or you have to make excuses in order that your that kind of performance can be accepted, and that's a shame. That's just an involution of something that was supposed to be, you know, free and rough, violent, smelly, filthy, dangerous, just like fucking life out there is, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and it's a kind of a way, I guess, for people to shelter themselves, cope with whatever our fallen empire has become. So, and also I doubt that many things like old Condom performances are our death squad, would that work now? Would be, or are people too jaded to react in any meaningful way, in any honest way? Would they laugh at it? I had MK9 play here in Bologna not so many years ago. It wasn't a physically confrontational performance, but the videos he showed in unison with the sounds, right. were really gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
And I was really happy about that, because even some people that were absolutely not into noise that were at the gig were genuinely upset and moved by that. And I was, yes, fuck.
Yeah.
It can still work.
Yeah.
But yeah, then you have to be MK9.
Right.
Yeah, it's complicated, I guess.
What do you enjoy about upsetting people or grossing people out or getting that reaction out of people? Why is that important for you?
I guess I like pranks.
Is it that simple?
I think so. Yeah, it's my own personal enjoyment. I like to see discomfort.
Are there things that make you uncomfortable?
Is there anything?
Are there things that make you uncomfortable?
No,
you could imagine happening at a concert or a show or performance or something like that, or on the street, that would make you really uncomfortable.
Sometimes I think about it. I'm afraid I still have to find something.
Mm.
I'd love to feel that, but it's more and more difficult, I guess.
Yeah. Do you feel like that era of noise is kind of over?
Which era you mean?
I don't know. Like, I feel like, you know, I don't want to say the peak of it, because this is just the peak in my exposure or generation, I guess, of noise fandom. But I mean, like the peak being like Bizarre Uproar, Filth and Violence. I remember when Filth and Violence label came out.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what that was, like 2010 or something like that. It was like
a bit earlier, I think.
Yeah. But well, it seemed like very era defining and really like intense and extreme, and people really, I mean, a lot of people really enjoyed it. It was like a big thing. And then you had a lot of copycats that were kind of like doing the same thing, but with kind of missing, in my opinion, at least missing the kind of the magic or the slight bit of.
Yeah, true. Yes.
Irony or not. I don't want to say irony, but kind of missing a little bit. I guess that's kind of the history of power electronics in some ways. It's like, you know, the even since the beginning, like, you know, like the people like White House are putting something out there that's really extreme. And then you get the people that kind of are like copying it, but taking it a little bit too literally.
Literally and seriously. You know?
But anyway, I feel like, you know, Filth and Violence was kind of like the peak of that. And that was really a widely accepted, widely loved label in the scene from a lot of people, I think, you know, not just like the bad boys. And then, you know, it's kind of lost its popularity. It's kind of gone out of visibility. I think it's still active.
It is.
But that seems like that type of approach to noise has kind of at least waned, if not like kind of maybe gone underground, under the rug. I don't know. And
under the underground. Yeah.
Yeah, under the underground. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, it comes back to what we were saying a moment ago about confrontational performances. I think that from what I saw and from the little insight I have, I think that the fading out or going under the underground of Filth and Violence, but many other acts or labels, also has to do with this sheltering and not wanting to see the bad shit. More in general, and not in noise, because simply Pazzi was banned from PayPal a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
Same happened to me like a few months ago, by the way. So
really?
I'm officially in the club. Yep. So, of course, it becomes harder to publicize your shit if every time you just write a name, then it gets fucking deleted,
right,
or censored, or all your covers become, you know, not shareable on Instagram or whatever, unless you put big stickers on them. So I think the spirit is still there, but it's a bit under the rug, as you say. Mm. So there are people that still revel in this kind of filth and base instincts and everything that's wrong, which of course is what we love. But maybe the stuff doesn't get around that much. It's maybe by
word of mouth.
You just personally, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I also do that with my photography releases, because I can't put them on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. So I just write to the people that I know that might be interested. Yeah. And if they want, they get it.
Long before Texas noise icon Keith Brewer dabbled in experimental music, he penned a demented fanzine dedicated to the most depraved films in history. Reanimated Miscarriage is proud to present this 9-issue compilation, taken from original materials, spanning over 80 pages of crude film reviews, serial killer biographies, sick collage art, rare early work from the likes of Mike Diana, and writings on Keith's legacy and influence by Joe Romer. This and 9 Old School Noise Corps reissues, new shirts, and a restock of mixtapes, zines, and Deadbeat at Dawn official merchandise will also be available in limited quantities. The easiest way to secure copies is by joining the mailing list by writing to diseaseofthespirit@gmail.com.
Tell me about your photography releases.
I've been dabbling in photography for, like, since 2005 or 6, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Stopped for a very long time, maybe 10 years. And a few years ago, I got again some film and started shooting again. So I've been releasing small book zines, like this one, like this small format,
mm-hmm.
you know? There are collections of pictures of various thematics. Like I made a zine that's cemetery pictures. I made this series, Sexual Retard. It's all about fetishization of some body parts or specific paraphilias and whatnot. It's all analog and very, very grimy and filthy. So it's kind of a parallel to my noise output.
And did you release that with Narcolepsia?
Some of them are
the Sexual Retard. I thought
Black Blood Press.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Last two ones were in a collaboration with him, because up to that point I made just 50 copies of each book.
Okay.
But then Manuel opted in and we made 100.
Yeah.
He gets 50 and I get 50.
Who are some of your favorite perverts in the noise world?
That's a great question. I think the first...
If you'd like to continue this episode, you'll need to subscribe at patreon.com/whitecentipedenoise. Once you do, you'll get access to the full version of this episode, as well as WCNTV episodes and a wide range of bonus noise content. White Centipede Noise Podcast is made possible entirely by Scene support. You can support by subscribing at patreon.com/whitecentipedenoise.